progressive voice of Minnesota. Post-primary day here on AM 950. That was a much shorter night than I expected last night, Hunter. By the way, Brett Johnson filling in for Doug Padgett today. Hunter also joining us, doing a little training. I was behind the glass yesterday, and now we switched things up a little bit. But, boy, I was kind of expecting to be hitting the refresh button on the Secretary of State results page till like 1 or 2 a.m. because I'm that much of a political nerd, but it was pretty much done by 10 o'clock.
I know. They wrapped up coverage. There was nothing past 11 that you could find any broadcasts about.
Even CD8, I mean, I was fully expecting that one to go into the middle of the night just because it was a wide open race, and typically those northern Minnesota results are notorious for coming in really slow, but Radinovich just ended up running away with the thing. So a lot of surprising results last night, including, of course, the end of Tim Pawlenty's political career. Hunter is very sad about that. I've had to get him a couple of Kleenex, and he's really feeling bad about that.
I was so surprised because I wasn't really paying attention. You sent me a text, and I'm like, what? Really? And then he never came back.
Yeah, when I was looking at the Secretary of State results page, when I originally saw that he was up by 10%, I'm thinking, well, yeah, they probably got like 2% of the vote in. But no, it's like, wow, they got 20% of the vote in, and he's up by 10 points. This is probably going to hold up. That was just shocking last night. Just a lot of surprises I wasn't expecting.
I made a joke. I was with my mom at a party last night, and I go, should we go over to the Tim Pawlenty party to celebrate?
Did he end up having a public
party? He had something, because I saw it on the news when I watched this morning. It was sad and very white collar with wine glasses. And
everyone's driving Maseratis and Lexuses to the Tim Pawlenty event. But I'm not going to shed too many tears from him because he's got a nice gig probably lined up on Wall Street in New York. Yeah, hopefully he still has that lease on that apartment he's got on Wall Street. I'm sure he's going to be doing just fine. But Tim Pawlenty is out. Jeff Johnson, the GOP nominee for governor. In fact, let's run through those results. We're going to go through pretty much everything outside of the state house races just because we would probably be here till about 6 o'clock going through all of those if we went through every single state house race. But we're going to go through all the results right now. Then we're going to kind of circle back and do a more detailed recap and analysis of all of these races. Hunter and I are going to kind of share our thoughts on that. But if you have any thoughts on what happened last night, give us a ring, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I haven't hosted in a while. I almost forgot the phone number. I had to look back up at the sheet listed above me, but you can give us a call. Otherwise, email us, comment at am950radio.com, comment at am950radio.com, or if you want to send us a tweet, we're at am950radio, or you can also just comment on the live feed on Facebook. By the way, you can watch us over on Facebook right now. Looks like we're getting a smooth connection and everything, so love to get your comments as well. So what do you say? Let's run down those results. We'll, of course, start out with the governor's race. Tim Walz came out on top for the DFL. He received 41.6% of the vote. Aaron Murphy in second place with 32%. Lori Swanson at 24.6%. Then a couple of fringe candidates came in with well under 2%. So Tim Walz, your DFL nominee for governor. We're going to get into some detail on that coming up a little bit later on the show. On the GOP side, the big surprise, the big upset, in fact, even 538 was covering this one and talking about how surprised they were. Jeff Johnson, 52.6% of the vote, so winning not just a plurality, but actually a majority of the vote for the GOP. Tim Pawlenty in a pretty distant second at 43.9% of the vote, and Matt Cruz, 3.5% of the vote. Hadn't really heard much about that guy, but he still got almost 4% of the vote, so not a bad showing for kind of a fringe candidate. But we're going to talk a little bit later on how I actually was not that surprised by the Tim Pawlenty Jeff Johnson race. I could kind of see that coming just going back to earlier this summer. And Hunter, I think you kind of had some of those similar thoughts as well. But all the polls showed Pawlenty running away with it, but I wasn't quite buying those. And, well, I get to pat myself on the back and say I was right.
Yeah. Well, I thought it would be closer at least.
Yeah.
Because those polls showed him kind of overwhelmingly ahead.
Yeah, they were like 51-30, or I think the most recent one from Emerson was like 40-28, something like that. They showed him with a pretty substantial lead. But we do have Jeff Johnson versus Tim Walz. That is your gubernatorial matchup. Let's move along to the U.S. Senate race. No surprise there. Amy Klobuchar, 95.7% of the vote. It's overwhelming. That's a nice nominating number.
Yeah, I heard she had one of the most distinct victories, like the highest margin of victories in a contested race.
Jim Neuberger, the Republican nominee, came in with 69.5% of the vote, and I'm going to agree with what you guys did in the last hour. I'm calling that race already for Amy Klobuchar, AM 950.
Projection.
Amy Klobuchar has defeated Jim Neuberger. The only question I have is, will she top him by a bigger margin than she did against Kurt Bills back in 2012, when I think that was pretty close to a 2-1 margin?
Yeah, and I think this is the year that it could be higher even.
I think so as well. I don't think the question is, can Amy get 60%? I think the question is, can she get 70%?
Yeah.
It could be that high. On the special election side, this was the biggest surprise of the night to me. It wasn't so much that Tina Smith won the race. I think most people were kind of expecting that. But she got 76.1% of the vote, while Richard Painter, just 13.7%. He only got 78,000 votes. I was very surprised by that. With his social media following and the amount of presence he had in some of the media markets, I thought he'd do a lot better.
And he was out there campaigning. He was available to speak with people, and it seemed like he had a loyal, loud following. So those numbers are really shocking to me.
Yeah, they're surprising to me too, but playing kind of Monday morning quarterback, I have some thoughts on maybe why that happened. We'll chime on that a little bit later on. And in fact, even just looking at Richard Painter's numbers, again, I said he got 78,000 votes. Bob Anderson, the person who lost to Karen Housley on the Republican side, actually got more votes than Richard Painter.
Wow.
Bob Anderson came in with 106,000. He got 35.6. Then, of course, the eventual GOP nominee, Karen Housley, chimed in with 62% of the vote. So Karen Housley versus Tina Smith will be your matchup. And I know we had a lot of passionate Richard Painter fans here on the station. Still, go out and vote for Tina Smith, because Karen Housley really reminds me of Sarah Palin 2.0.
Yeah.
We do not want to have her in the Senate. So go out and vote for Tina Smith this fall, even if you don't necessarily agree with her on all the issues. I at least agree with her on most of the issues. There's a couple I take exception with, but I'm still going to be enthusiastically supporting Tina Smith coming up this fall. I don't know about you. I'm assuming you're in that same boat as well.
Yeah, and I've seen some Richard Painter fans today saying that their goal, that they will support Tina Smith, but they're going to try and push her on some of these issues they disagree with, which that could be a good thing.
Quickly, let's run down the House races. In CD1, Dan Feehan, the Democratic nominee, got in 83.1% of the vote. He's a really strong candidate. We're going to talk about that later on. On the GOP side, this one I thought would be a little bit closer. Jim Hagedorn, 60.1%. He knocks off State Senator Carla Nelson. She only got 32.2% of the vote. What's interesting here is that if Carla Nelson actually had been the nominee and ended up winning that congressional seat, it actually would have triggered a special election in the state Senate, which potentially could have given the DFL another chance to take the majority in the state Senate. But that one didn't happen. How about CD3, DFL side? Dean Phillips, 81.6% of the vote. And Cole Young, 18.4% of the vote. Who's Cole Young, by the way?
Yeah, we got to get into this later.
Yeah.
I have never heard of this guy, and he got a large amount of votes. And I'm very active in CD3. This is strange to me.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in just a moment. In CD2, there were no people contesting the primary, so that's going to be Angie Craig versus Jason Lewis. In CD4, Betty McCollum actually did have a couple of challengers, but she still got 91% of the vote. She'll be running against a Republican by the name of Greg Ryan. I have no idea who Greg Ryan is, so best of luck to you against Betty McCollum. You're going to need it. CD5, Ilhan Omar almost got a majority of the vote. She got 48.2. Next closest challenger was Margaret Anderson Kelleher at 30%. Patricia Torres-Ray came in third with 13%. So Ilhan Omar, a 99.9% chance she is going to be the next congressperson in CD5, one of the few Muslim members of Congress. I think she might actually be the only one after Ellison.
She'll be the first female Muslim Somali.
I think one
woman.
Of them, because I think Michigan actually in a special election might have
actually...
Yeah,
there's a chance that they both end up being in at the same time.
Yeah, but I just love the fact that it's going to annoy the heck out of your Steve Kings and your Louis Gohmerts in the U.S. House.
But another AM 950 projection that Ilhan Omar will be CD5 congressperson.
You're really going out on a limb there. How about District 6, Ian Todd, the DFL nominee, uncontested, he got it. Tom Emmer, he got the GOP nomination with 76.6% of the vote. He beat A.J. Kern. Do you know anything about A.J. Kern, Hunter?
No.
So A.J. Kern would make Michelle Bachmann blush with how conservative she is. She's a St. Cloud Times columnist, and she's, well, to say the least, very, very anti-Muslim. You can find some of her controversies over at Blue Stem Prairie, as Sally Joe does a nice job covering outstate Minnesota. But yeah, A.J. Kern is just nuts, and she's run against Tom Emmer a couple of times and just got 17% of the vote. But yeah, she makes Michelle Bachmann blush. That's how kind of nuts she is.
What a delightful lady.
Yeah, indeed. Over in CD7, everyone's favorite Democrat, Colin Peterson, got the nomination as he was uncontested in that race. He'll be going up against Dave Hughes. I think that was the guy that ran against him back in 2016 and actually came kind of close to beating Colin Peterson. Hughes got 72% of the vote, a little over 72, I should say. And the big one, this is going to be one of the most hotly contested races this fall, at least in the general election. Joe Radenovich gets the DFL nomination, 44.2% of the vote. This is one that I thought could go deep into the night just because we had five very distinct candidates. And the other day when Doug Padgett actually spoke with Aaron Brown of Minnesota Brown, he's kind of our northern Minnesota politics expert, he was saying that all five of these candidates kind of represented a different region of CD8. So he was thinking that while Radenovich is the favorite, this one could go kind of deep into the night just because the votes might split by region, but that ended up not really being the case as Radenovich ended up with 44%. He will be the DFL nominee. I know he's got big financial backing. He's got a lot of money raised so far, and he'll be taking on Pete Stauber, who is a pretty strong Republican candidate. He's very pro-Trump, but he's been running for a while. I know he's also raised a lot of money, and the Donald likes him as well. So,
oh, yeah. Didn't Donald go campaign with him?
He went campaigning. In fact, I think Pete Stauber might have even gone to the airport to help get Trump to that rally back in June. Yeah. And a couple more to look at. Let's look at the constitutional offices. Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison. I'm not necessarily surprised that he won. I'm just surprised by the margin. He got almost half the vote, 49.8%. Deborah Hillstrom was the next closest at 19.1, while Tom Foley, Matt Pelican, and Mike Rothman checked in somewhere around 8 to 12% for each of them. So it's Keith Ellison, the DFL nominee for Attorney General. And Hunter and I are going to have a little bit of a debate on that later in the show. You're pretty confident in Keith Ellison, I think, but I have my concerns about if he's going to be able to win statewide for AG because he'll be running against a guy named Doug Wardlow. He is the Republican nominee for Attorney General in Minnesota, and he has a very, very checkered background, and he has me very worried. This is not a guy we want as our Attorney General in Minnesota. He ended up winning the nomination with 46.3% of the vote. Sharon Anderson, 32.1% of the vote. I have some funny stories about her, looking at her in the media, because I was kind of surprised that this one ended up being close. I knew Wardlow was a big guy in the Republican Party. They really liked him, and I never heard of Sharon Anderson. So I Googled her, and she's what the Star Tribune calls a perennial candidate, and she has some interesting views on issues, to say the least. We'll get into a little bit later on if we have some time. Other than that, state auditor, both of those were uncontested primaries. Your matchup will be Julie Blaha for the Democrats, Pam Myra for the Republicans, and for the Secretary of State, Steve Simon ran unopposed for the nomination on the DFL side. He'll be running up against John Howe of the Republicans. So that's a look at what your general election matchups will look like coming up this fall. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Give us a thought. What do you think about the general election matchups coming up this fall? What did you think of the primary last night? Were you surprised by any of the results? Coming up next, Hunter and I are going to dissect some of these races a little bit deeper and provide our analysis. You are listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Join New York Times bestselling author William Kent Krueger for A Night of Intrigue and Mystery on Tuesday, August 28th at Common Good Books. Krueger will read from his next entry in the Cork O'Connor series, Desolation Mountain. It's a punch-to-the-gut novel about a father-son team working to uncover the truth behind the tragic plane crash of a senator and the mysterious disappearances of several first responders. That's William Kent Krueger at Common Good Books in St. Paul on Tuesday, August 28th at 7 p.m. Visit commongoodbooks.com.
Visit the wine bar at Cafe Latte and enjoy a unique handcrafted pizza and glass of wine. The perfect place for an intimate night or an evening with friends. Choices range from spicy Italian sausage and sweet roasted peppers to the one-of-a-kind nacho chicken pizza layered with blue corn tortilla chips. The approachable wine list offers over 30 by the glass, with special emphasis on wines from Washington State. End your night with one of Cafe Latte's melt-in-your-mouth desserts, 850 Grand Avenue, St. Paul.
Hi, I'm Scott Peterson with the Minnesota News Network, inviting you to join us this week for Minnesota Matters, a news, entertainment, and sports show covering everything that matters in the North Star State. Tune us in right here or at your convenience at minnesotanewsnetwork.com.
Listen to Minnesota Matters every weekend, Saturday mornings at 5:30 and Sunday mornings at 6:30 on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Branding Electrolysis on Grand Avenue in St. Paul has been a leader in permanent hair removal for people of all skin types and backgrounds for over 30 years, celebrating diversity and priding themselves on finding the right treatment plan for each client's individual needs, regardless of race or gender. Services include electrolysis, body waxing, facials, microneedling, and permanent makeup. Book your 60-minute complimentary consultation, including a 15-minute treatment today, for beautiful, lasting results. Visit BrendingElectrolysis.com.
Stages Theater Company is dedicated to creating a space where diverse opinions, courageous dialogue, and community engagement is not only valued, but vital to our shared artistic and educational success. Stages Theater Company creates a welcoming home for all. For over 30 years, Stages has supported quality theater programming for children. Stages gives opportunities for youth to be on stage, backstage, in the audience, and in the classroom. Whether you come to see a show, enroll a young person in a workshop, or benefit from their outreach programs in the community, Stages brings art to life. Learn about Stages Theater by going to stagestheater.org and become part of the magic of live theater by taking your family to an amazing show or enrolling someone you love in an education program. Stages Theater Company operates out of the Hopkins Center for the Arts, located in Main Street in the heart of downtown Hopkins. For more information on Stages Theater, go to stagestheater.org. That's stagestheater.org.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's Brett Johnson, Hunter Haas filling in for Doug Padgett today. He is on assignment at an undisclosed location. Oh, I actually have no idea.
He's like Carmen Sandiego.
Where in the world is Doug Padgett? I know he was bummed to miss yesterday and today, but he's got some other commitments, and I'm sure he'll have some thoughts on what happened yesterday as well. Doug should be back in studio coming up tomorrow here on AM 950. So between the three major races that got the most media attention, governor, the special election Senate, and the attorney general, I went 1-for-3 in who I voted for. I'm not going to say who and which race I picked right, but how did you do, Hunter? You said you did pretty well with your picks.
Yeah, only one person I voted for didn't end up winning last night.
So you did better than me. Okay. I did 1-for-3. That's good batting average, though, if you're going 333 on that.
Yeah, that's good batting average.
Yeah. You were joking, though, how normally the people you vote for in your primaries almost never win.
Yeah, so last night at the party, I was like, this is the first time I've ever been to a political event where my candidate has won. Like, I am so used to losing.
Yeah, you're like the Vikings fan.
Exactly. Oh, God, and that never ends. It's tough being a liberal Vikings fan.
That's a good point to bring up, a liberal Vikings fan. Yeah, that does got to be tough, especially if you're on the left side of the party, which you and I kind of are. What do you say we take a closer look at the governor's race? So we got Tim Walz versus Jeff Johnson. That's going to be your general election matchup. Let's start off on the Republican side, because I think that's the interesting one to talk about, since that one caught a lot of people by surprise, but I'm going to say it didn't catch me by surprise very much. I was at the GOB convention working for Mike McEntee, getting that streamed earlier this summer, and I just saw a lot of anti-Tim Pawlenty sentiment among that base. It really surprised me. I mean, of course, knowing that Pawlenty wasn't seeking the endorsement, I thought, well, of course, people aren't going to necessarily like him. But just about everyone who spoke on that floor was all against Tim Pawlenty. They almost made him sound like a DFLer with how much they didn't like him. And to see Jeff Johnson come out on top 52-43, I mean, maybe the margin was a little bit of a surprise, but I'm not shocked that Jeff Johnson ended up winning the nomination for the Republicans.
Yeah, you know, I really could have seen this race falling in a combination of any of the five candidates, really. It was close all the way around, but I was preparing for Tim Pawlenty. I did think he was going to win. I did also agree, though, that he wasn't popular, but I thought people were just going to vote for him because that's who they're used to.
Yeah, we made the comment, was it yesterday or a couple of days ago, that to me, Tim Pawlenty kind of reminded me of the Hillary Clinton of the Minnesota Republican Party.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, we don't need to rehash 2016, but he was kind of that big money candidate that the base was okay with if they ended up getting the nomination, but they weren't thrilled with. They felt like they could go with someone who maybe represented their base a little bit more. And to be honest, that actually kind of turned out to be the case. A lot of parallels between what happened with Hillary and actually what happened with Tim Pawlenty, where Pawlenty came in with a ton of money. A lot of people felt he was inevitable. He was ahead in the polls substantially, and he ended up losing. And unfortunately, that's actually what ended up happening with Hillary Clinton as well.
I mean, and we should celebrate that Tim Pawlenty's not winning, but we have to get right to work to opposing Jeff Johnson, because he wants to make Minnesota a right-to-work state.
And Jeff Johnson is all about Donald Trump. In fact, that's one of the major reasons why he ended up beating Tim Pawlenty, is that it almost turned into a contest, especially if you watched part of that NPR debate, is who could snuggle up to Donald Trump the closest, and that ended up being Jeff Johnson.
And it's so ironic, because 2 years ago they were both criticizing Donald Trump on who hated him more, and now they're backtracking on who loves him more.
Yeah, and in fact, during that debate, I think Tim Pawlenty even accused Jeff Johnson of saying that, well, you, Jeff, called Donald Trump a word we can't say on the radio. And Johnson countered saying, well, you were against Donald Trump the entire time. So
yeah, it was an argument of who disliked Trump more, but now likes him the most.
Yeah. Here's my question to you. Do you think Donald Trump comes to Minnesota to campaign for Jeff Johnson?
Maybe for Jeff Johnson. I don't think he would for Tim Pawlenty. But
I would probably agree there. I'm thinking Donald's going to make an appearance in Minnesota, though, with how many close races we have. You would think at some point he's going to come back to the...
And he has his eyes on Minnesota. He regrets not coming here more in the general election 2016. And Jeff Johnson's the type that will throw out the red meat to the conservative base, so he could get Trump visiting here.
Yeah, we'll have to see. I'm thinking Trump's going to make probably multiple appearances in Minnesota in the run-up to the election, not only because of the governor's race, but because of how many close congressional races we have. I know Jason Lewis loves Donald Trump.
Oh, yeah, that's another one.
Eric Paulson probably doesn't want to be anywhere near Donald Trump. Oh, I just hope he comes to the Twin Cities and they have that awkward moment where Eric Paulson has to get on stage with Trump.
Oh, I know. He's running to appear as a moderate.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll see when he comes to Minnesota. I'm pretty sure he's coming back. How about the DFL side? So this one, as we were talking about, I really had no idea who was going to end up winning this race between Walls, Murphy, and Lori Swanson. Ended up being Tim Walls by somewhat substantial margin, nearly by 10 percentage points. But as I look at the map of where the votes came in, Tim Walls came in with a really good strategy. Did well, not only just in the inner ring suburbs and the cities, but also in southern Minnesota as well. Of course, that's the area he represents. He was able to rack up a lot of votes there, and that's really what carried him. And come general election, if you can win, I know Matt's mentioned this before, between the metro area, the Iron Range / northern Minnesota, then the rest of rural Minnesota, if you can win two of those three areas, you're in good shape to win a general election. And right now, Walls is in pretty good shape, as he's got a pretty firm base of support in the metro area and also rural Minnesota. Northern Minnesota actually turned out going pretty well for Lori Swanson. Even though she finished in third place, she won, trying to count them up here, it looks to be about 15 to 20 counties in northern Minnesota. So Erin Murphy, though, I was surprised that she actually did not win Hennepin County. She ended up winning only two counties overall in the state of Minnesota. One was Ramsey County, which she won by, I think, 3 or 4 percentage points. And then Cook County, which is up in the Arrowhead area of Minnesota. That one kind of surprised me that she didn't win at least Hennepin County, because if she had any chance at the nomination, she had to really clean up in Hennepin. But that had actually ended up going the way of Tim Walls.
Yeah, the map is really surprising because Erin Murphy got a substantial amount of votes. She came very close, but on the map, you wouldn't know that.
On the map, it looks like she got trounced, but she actually came, within 10 percentage points of Walls, which isn't that close, but still is, within striking distance. So I was surprised she didn't do better, but I think part of it goes back to her pick of running mate in Erin Mae Quaid. I want to echo what Matt said the last hour. I love Erin Murphy and Erin Mae Quaid as politicians. I think they're the future of the party. But I just wasn't sure about that strategy of going with Erin Mae Quaid as your running mate and having two metro area candidates as your ticket.
And then there's some consequences, too, that we face in her district because of the choice.
Yeah, again, I want to emphasize, I love Erin Mae Quaid. I think she's a great politician. And in fact, I wish she would have stayed in the state house, because I think she really could have been on an upward trajectory to maybe being part of the DFL leadership, maybe a House Majority Leader, or heck, even in a few years, maybe House Speaker. But looking at the ballot, since she ran for Lieutenant Governor, she is actually not running for her House district, which is 57A. Which is an area that represents, I think it's like Apple Valley, Burnsville, kind of that South Metro area that's south of the river. She's not running for re-election, which opens up a very competitive race in 57A. And this one, I'm kind of a warrior when it comes to elections. This one has me concerned. Now, the matchup is going to be, according to what happened at the primary last night, Robert Bierman will be the DFL nominee. He was able to beat out a couple of other candidates to be the DFL nominee. He'll be running against Matt London, who is the Republican nominee in 57A. Now you're wondering, why am I talking about a House district? Well, this is going to be one of the more competitive races this fall. This is Mae Quaid's now former seat, and this just means the DFL has to pour more resources into holding this district, because it's been very competitive over the years. Back in 2016, Erin Mae Quaid won 52-48 over Allie Jimenez-Hopper. 2014 actually went Republican by a fairly substantial margin, 58-41. 2012, it was closer. It was 53-46 in favor of the Republicans. So this just makes another competitive race that the DFL is going to have to defend in the state house.
Yeah, and in 2016, Erin Mae Quaid was the only candidate to flip a state house district from Republicans.
Wow, really?
She was the only one. So that is what is a shame of this situation, because we had such a rising star, and now she doesn't have her congressional seat anymore.
And as you guys said last hour, I hope she gets back into politics. I think she has a bright future, but it's just unfortunate that now we got to go back and win that seat yet again in order to get that House majority. And the Republican running in that seat, again, is Matt London, and to me, he looks like a pretty strong candidate. He's a high school hockey coach in the area, and of course, being in Minnesota, if you're involved with high school hockey, generally makes you a pretty popular person. He's well-known in the community, and even looking at his campaign website, doesn't really say a whole lot, so nothing controversial, but sometimes as a Republican, if you're running in an unfriendly year, not saying anything can sometimes be your best strategy. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be one to watch coming up this fall, and if the DFL doesn't hold on to that 57A, we're going to have to look back at that governor's race and saying, ooh, maybe we didn't make the right decision in that Murphy Mae Quaid ticket. And just to finish up my point on that one, I mean, I don't mean to bash Erin Murphy and Erin Mae Quaid. Again, I like them both as candidates. I just was not necessarily thrilled about their strategy. I was just going to make one final point, Hunter. I think if Erin Murphy had picked someone from outstate Minnesota as her running mate, I think she maybe would have been the DFL nominee.
Yeah, and my idea was she could have had Rebecca Otto as the lieutenant governor, because at the convention, she hadn't picked Erin Mae Quaid yet, and Rebecca Otto was available and has experience running statewide. That could have brought in more numbers for her. Which I don't know if Erin Mae Quaid brought anyone new necessarily to Erin Murphy. I think they were already for Aaron Murphy.
Yeah, I just think the biggest criticism, they were two very similar candidates that mm-hmm. came from the same region. I think that's really their big downfall that ended up kind of costing them a DFL nomination. Just briefly touching on what happened with the Lori Swanson, Rick Nolan ticket. They again came in third place. The allegations against Lori Swanson probably didn't help her down the stretch, but picking Rick Nolan certainly made her competitive, though, as she won a number of districts in northern Minnesota. So again, that goes to my point that if Aaron Murphy had picked someone from outstate Minnesota, this race could have looked a lot different. But anyways, it will be Tim Walls, your DFL nominee. His running mate is Peggy Flanagan. Definitely make sure you go out and vote for Tim Walls coming up this fall for governor. He'll make a tremendous governor of Minnesota. Heck of a lot better than Jeff Johnson.
Yeah.
Coming up on the other side of the break, we're going to talk a little bit more about the governor's race, then get into the special election Senate race, also AG as well. Again, Hunter and I are going to debate a little bit on whether Keith Ellison is the right pick for the DFL for AG. If you have thoughts, give us a call, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. This is AM 950.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake. Our weekly Native American talk radio show will discuss national and local Native American news and events. Local and national guests will help us keep current with Mother Earth, tribal, and Twin City issues. Native American issues are human issues. We invite all people to walk hand in hand with our struggles, victories, and achievements. Listen Saturdays at 2 p.m.
I am awake.
Hi, Gregory Rich, host of AM 950's Drink in the Style. Are you a fan of cool? Then let me introduce you to Gus Modern. Available exclusively in the Twin Cities at Habitation Furnishing and Design, Gus Modern is kind of mid-century, kind of contemporary, and 100% cool. Timeless, comfortable, awesome, and through August 19th, 20% off. Visit GusModern.com or stop in at Habitation at 4317 Excelsior Boulevard and check it out.
This is Pat with PJW Automotive in New Brighton. I've been in business long enough to know that if you want to stand out, you better be the best. That's why I've assembled a top-notch team of automotive specialists who do the job right the first time. Bringing your car or truck to PJW Automotive is an investment in the future of your vehicle. Try us once and you'll see it's worth the drive to PJW Automotive. One exit north of 694 on 35W and online at pjwauto.com.
At Pride Institute, being LGBTQ plus is the norm, not the exception. Their highly trained and skilled staff understand your issues and will help you live a happy, healthy life as a proud LGBTQ plus person. They offer you hope to overcome your addiction and live the life you want. Their treatment programs are designed to assist you in developing the knowledge, skills, and attitudes for long-term recovery. Therapy groups include health education, LGBTQ issues, HIV and chronic illness, trauma, grief and loss, transgender support, nicotine recovery education, and sexual health. Pride Institute offers a residential treatment program, a partial hospitalization program that includes day programming with lodging, and an intensive outpatient program. If you or someone in your life can benefit from guidance and coping skills, life balance, and other tools necessary for long-term recovery, check them out at pride-institute.com or call 800-547-7433 now.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Hunter Hawes. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 65. Thursday, partly sunny with a high near 84. And Friday, sunny with a high near 87. This week's EatLocalMinnesota.com Restaurant of the Week is The Great Wall. Just north of 50th and France in Edina, the Great Wall Restaurant has been providing a delicious taste of authentic Chinese cuisine since 1981. Find out more at EatLocalMinnesota.com.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. You got Brett Johnson, Hunter Hawes filling in for Doug Padgett, doing a little post-primary analysis. Some comments in the Facebook feed. Lisa said only one of her choices didn't win. So sounds like Lisa went 2 for 3. She did better than me. Also, Tammy in the comments feed says she wasn't sure if Ellison was going to secure the win, but she's glad he's getting the benefit of the doubt, and it will be interesting to see how it plays out closer to the election. We're going to talk about that race in just a few minutes, but I want to throw something out here about Tim Walls. I'm going to use the old Herman Cain line. I don't have facts to back this up, but follow me for a second. So Tim Walz, very likely to be the next governor of Minnesota. That's at least my hunch. So think about this. Tim Walz will have been a rural congressman turned governor of a Midwestern battleground state. He's in his 50s. He looks like a politician. He kind of has that look, wouldn't you agree?
Mm-hmm.
He just
looks
like a stereotypical politician. His stock is going to be rising quickly if he gets in that governor's mansion. I think he's going to be fielding some calls from D.C., and I'm already going to make a prediction. I think he's going to be on the short list of potential VP nominees in 2020.
Yeah, it's surprising that this can happen so quick, but you are totally right. He is a prime candidate become a VP.
Just look at that resume. Yeah, rural congressman, governor of a Midwestern state. If he's not in the conversation for VP in 2020, and God forbid Donald Trump gets reelected, all of a sudden he might be a front runner in 2024 for the whole presidential nomination himself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's not going to run for president in 2020. That would be crazy to be elected governor. Then all of a sudden you go campaign for president. That wouldn't be a good look. But VP could be interesting because you don't necessarily have to actively campaign to be the VP up until pretty much the summer of that election.
And what's interesting, too, is he appeals to both sides of the Democratic Party. You could see him being the VP for, like, the Kamala Harris type.
Mm-hmm.
But you also could for Bernie Sanders, because Tim Walz's thing is all working-class issues. And the only, like, real criticism people had was his gun record. But Bernie was also kind of a gun guy. So he really could fit in a lot of places in that race.
Elizabeth Warren, he could make a great running mate for her as well. He could provide a lot of balance to some of these potential nominees for the Democrats in 2020. So
really interesting.
I know we're looking way ahead, but watch his name if he gets in the governor's mansion. Tim Walz, get D.C. Ready on your speed dial. Does anyone use speed dial anymore? But yeah, get ready for those phone calls. I think he's going to be hearing from some folks at the DNC coming up in the next few years once we get into the presidential election cycle. So that's our thoughts on the governor's race, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Well, let's talk about that special election Senate race. Hunter, what the heck happened to Richard Painter?
I have no idea. This is not what I expected. I thought this race would be much, much closer from everything that I was seeing. And, you know, I'm a little discouraged, too, that the way that Richard Painter campaigned was very admirable. He was very available, present. He was everywhere. And the fact that that didn't turn into results at all is discouraging.
I mean, he was on our station a ton. I mean, a good dozen, maybe 15 times. Certainly the base here at AM 950 really got to know Richard Painter. Mm-hmm. But as I thought about it more, I mean, he has a big social media following. Some people were kind of mockingly calling him the Twitter candidate, which, whatever, do whatever you want with that. But maybe he just didn't get outside of the Twin Cities enough, really, to other parts of the state where people could get to know him. I was speaking with another person who follows politics closely, and they were saying they had some friends that they thought would really be good voters for Richard Painter, but they didn't even know who he was. So maybe that was kind of the downfall of Richard Painter, is that he just didn't get enough to all around the state of Minnesota to really build up that voting base. And then, of course, you have this, too. I mean, he's running against a relatively popular incumbent senator in a primary. That's always a tall task. So either way, Richard Painter definitely did not perform exactly to where he wanted to. Only with 13.7% of the vote, as Tina Smith will be the nominee for the DFL in the special election coming up this fall. Another thought on Richard Painter, though, I hope he stays involved in politics because I think he's a good voice to have in the Democratic Party despite the criticism that the DFL leveled at him, which, by the way, as you guys were talking about last hour, what are you doing, DFL? If it's a 75-15, you didn't need to go out and do that.
No, if they were seeing polls like that, I don't know.
But maybe that also begs the question, maybe there was no polling on that race. And
well, we never
saw
it.
Going on a hinge, going on a hunch saying, well, this has got to be close, but turned out definitely not to be the case.
Yeah, it's if to see Richard Painter stick around, it would be great. And if he ran for a congressional seat,
exactly.
I think that would be his strength, just because of how good he was being at campaigning in a urban area or just a contained area.
Yeah, a contained area is a good way to put it, because Unfortunately, looking at the Secretary of State's map, I only had a breakdown, at least, of where the votes came in for each candidate by county, only for the governor's race. I'm sure if I did some really deep digging, I could probably look at where the votes came in on the other races, but I'm venturing guesses that Richard Painter probably didn't do very well outside of Hennepin and Ramsey counties. So going to your point, I think he would make a good congressional candidate where he doesn't have to campaign in such a large area. So hopefully, Richard Painter, if you're listening, run for Congress coming up next session.
Or start a show on AM 950.
Or there you go as well. Or maybe don't run for Congress because maybe the DFL will win all 8 seats. Yeah. That'd be the ultimate dream, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Well, CD6 would be tough. Richard, go challenge Tom Emmer coming up in 2020. Emmer needs a challenge. Although I don't want to slight Ian Todd. He's the DFL candidate. We've had him on a couple times. He's a really good millennial. Just unfortunately, that's a tall task
tough
to try it
feat.
On. Try to
yeah.
take on Emmer in CD6. Hey, we got a couple of callers on the line, including one of the big Richard Painter supporters. That's Jennifer in Stillwater. Jennifer, I know you got to be feeling pretty bummed about what happened last night.
Well, I'm not surprised that he didn't win. I'm just surprised that he lost by as much as he did. Because, you know, after they screw around with the totally useless caucuses and convention process, which is totally controlled by the special interests, then it was already June 6th, and Tina Smith started running ads June 15th every single night during the 6 o'clock news, which is all corporate money. You know, and then the primary is August 14th. He didn't have time to run. You can't run a statewide race in, you know, 2 months. So I hope he runs again in 2020. But I wanted to say about the governor and Richard Painter race, you know, I'm a DFL insider, and what's going on here has been going on since the 70s, at least. It's the mining mafia. They knocked out Rebecca Otto, Leah Pfeiffer in the 8th, John Tollefson for state auditor, and Richard Painter for Senate, because those were the environmental candidates, and anyone that comes out and says they're for the environment and they're against mining, copper mining, will be knocked out. And when I say mining mafia, who I'm referring to is the trade unions and the corporate wing of the DFL, neoliberal Hillary types, which is what Tina Smith is. And I'm a union person. My parents were both in AFSCME. One worked for the county, Washington County, one worked for MnDOT for the state. I'm a huge union person. I'm just not a trade union person, because what they do is they just want jobs, 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 and they don't care if it's a pipeline that's creating climate change, oil pipelines, or copper mines poisoning our water. And they have been controlling the DFL since at least the 1970s. And they took out, starting right in, you know, February with the caucuses, they go right through and they knocked out Rebecca Otto, Leah Pfeiffer, John Tollefson, and then they turned on Richard Painter. And the way Aaron Murphy avoided getting
knocked out. Hey, Jennifer, I got to cut you off there just because we're running a little bit short on time and we got some other callers to get to. But thanks for your thoughts. And I know some people definitely share your opinion that sometimes the DFL can be a little bit too friendly towards mining interests in the area. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Julie and David, hang on a few more minutes because I want to talk a little bit about the AG race right now. Keith Ellison came out ahead with, again, 49% of the vote. He will be the DFL nominee for Attorney General. And Hunter and I know we're going to have a little conversation about, is he necessarily the best candidate for the DFL coming up in the general election? We're going to talk about that in just a few minutes. You're listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Hey, Minnesota, Norman Goldman here. Catch me live every weeknight from 5 to 8 p.m. right here on AM 950. Whether it's a recap of the day's news, legal analysis, or teaching civics, justice is always served on the Norman Goldman Show. Today on the show, we're definitely doing senior legal analyst time as the Paul Manafort trial is rocketing towards its conclusion. And also, we're managing to get the important stuff out of Omarosa without the tabloid stuff. So do join me every weeknight from 5 to 8 on AM 950.
What kind of a jackass would let an animal pick their insurance? Did you really think a lizard could save you money on car insurance? Would you let a duck pick your health policy? Insurance can be a zoo, but this is ridiculous. What you really need is an insurance agent that isn't looking out for the insurance companies. You need Cheryl at Array, an independent agent with 30 years experience looking for the best rate possible. Quit monkeying around and call 763-504-3067. That's 763-504-3067 for Cheryl at Array, representing you, not the insurance companies.
Get your windows washed before the fall rush. Blue Sky Surfaces' final sale before fall is this month only, where you can get up to 25 window panes washed inside and out for only $129. Call 651-447-4484. No matter the job size, August is the time to save money on your window cleaning. So beat the fall rush and take advantage of Blue Sky Surfaces' August sale prices. Call 651-447-4484. That's Blue Sky Services at 651-447-4484.
Minnesota has a lot going on this summer, and I don't want to miss a moment of it. However, my carpets remind me of the good times later. That's why I call Zero Res. I'm not willing to waste a beautiful summer weekend washing rugs, so don't worry, because the carpet cleaning heroes at Zero Res can help. So schedule your cleaning today by calling 952-ZERO-RES, or you can book online at ZeroResMinnesota.com. Don't forget to ask for the special AM 950 listener pricing. Zero Res, spell it backward or forward. It spells the same.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Julie, David, hang on a few more minutes. We'll get to your calls in just a moment. But first, I want to talk the AG race. So Keith Ellison is the DFL nominee for Attorney General. And you and I, Hunter, have a little different opinions on this. The big concern I have with Keith Ellison is we need to win this race statewide, because I am very worried about this Republican candidate that got the nomination on their end named Doug Wardlow. If you don't know anything about Doug Wardlow, here's some background information on him. I'll take this directly from the Wikipedia page. It'll only take a couple of moments here. Wardlow currently serves as legal counsel for the Alliance Defending Freedom. That should pause alarm right there. That's a conservative Christian legal nonprofit in Arizona. The group has been labeled an anti-gay hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Wow.
So this is the GOP nominee for Attorney General Doug Wardlow, working for this group, Alliance Defending Freedom. Some of the work Wardlow has done for this group includes suing and threatening to school districts for allowing transgender students to use restrooms in accordance with their gender identity. So we're going to potentially get a guy in office who's obsessed with those bathroom bill type things. He also successfully argued that a Detroit funeral home could fire a transgender employee because the owner's religious opposition to transgender people. That was the only reason, and he argued for that in Detroit. Even looking at his campaign website, he has a lot of those dog whistle issues for conservative, talking about how he wants to defend religious liberty and free speech and the rights of the conscious. Rights of the conscious, to me, is kind of a code word for those cake baker kind of cases that we saw with the Supreme Court. And, of course, he also wants to curb unfair rules and regulations that burden job creators. Yes, that term has come back. So that's why we need to win this race. We cannot allow a guy like Doug Wardlow to be the GOP nominee. My concern is that the media is really going to make this race about Keith Ellison, and they're going to kind of let this guy Doug Wardlow just skate by scot-free, and we can't let him do that. I mean, look at this guy's background. Alliance for Defending Freedom. He works for this group. They've been called a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. We got to make this race about Doug Wardlow as well.
Yes, but first, the results from last night. Keith Ellison was in a very contested primary, and he won with about 50% of that, and has over, twice the numbers that Doug has.
Yeah, it was 280,000 for Ellison and 135 for Doug Wardlow. So yeah, Keith got about twice as many votes.
And Doug was basically running unopposed. It was like a ghost candidate that got the other votes.
We don't have time to get into it, but he ran against Sharon Anderson, who ended up getting a third of the vote. And I just got to ask, GOP, what are you doing? She's a perennial candidate, according to the Star Tribune. And she did an interview with friend of the show, Kevin Featherly, where, among other things, she says she's been thrown in jail, thrown in nut wards. They're trying to bug me in this house. I've been reduced to poverty. They tried to hack my computer with Windows 10. This is all stuff that she said. And she somehow got a third of the vote for the Republican GOP primary of Attorney General. So just a side funny note there.
And all those things that you're concerned about with Doug is we can put him on blast. Like the DFL can run ads at this because this is not what Minnesotans value. That might fly in other places, but that's not going to fly in the general public here.
I'm just concerned about people saying he's the Keith Ellison is the ultimate boogeyman for Republicans, and they're going to do their best to make that race about Keith Ellison.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't want to see Doug Wardlow skate by scot-free. So if you're a big Ellison supporter, I mean, I'm going to say I'm certainly going to vote for Keith Ellison in the Attorney's General's race as long as, you know, he doesn't have any other concrete evidence that comes out against him regarding that domestic abuse controversy. But I'd certainly be voting for him. But pay attention to that race and make sure the focus also stays on Doug Wardlow as well, because he is not a guy we want in that Attorney General's office.
No.
So let's go ahead and take a couple of calls. Only got a few minutes left in the show. Let's actually go to Julie in Minneapolis, wants to talk about Aaron Murphy. Julie, make it pretty quick. Yeah. I want to get to some other callers before we wrap up here.
Sure. Just very quickly, I would say I do have a lot of faith in the normal, genuine Christians in Minnesota, you know, the mainliners, Lutherans, Methodists, and there are much fewer wacko Christians than people may think. I really think Aaron Murphy was a fantastic candidate. You know, I'm a woman who had some health problems. I didn't have any transportation. Somehow her office got the message that I needed a ride. It got into my condominium, which is a security condominium, and knocked on my door. A wonderful person. I agree with you guys on that. Originally, I was for Rebecca Otto, and so I just kind of wanted to throw in my two cents about that.
All right. Yeah, thank you very much, Julie, and glad you were able to get out and vote yesterday in the primary. Time for one more caller. We've got about a minute left in the show. David in New Hope wants to pose the question, is the endorsement still important? Is it, David?
So I just wanted to point out the vast difference between the outcome of the popular vote and the endorsements at the DFL convention. In particular, Keith Ellison was not endorsed. Pelican was. And Ellison got incredibly more, but Pelican just didn't do well at all in the popular vote.
Yeah, just 10.6%.
Aaron Murphy, of course, was the endorsed candidate, and she lost to Wolf by, you know, a bunch. And I'm wondering if there might be some sort of problem with the DFL structure in that the convention does not seem to reflect the popular opinions very closely.
Well, it's been happening for a while, I know, and thanks very much, David, for the call in DFL circles. I forgot who gave me this stat, but I think of like all the past DFL governors over the past 50 years or so, like none of them have actually turned out to be the endorsed candidate from the convention. So, interesting thoughts from David, and does pose the question, is the endorsement still relevant? Hunter Haas, Brett Johnson, been filling in on your Wednesday afternoon. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.